All right, 228, appreciate the attendance of everyone. Nice to have a good crowd. Appreciate that very much. At Levi Red, we have 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 17, the famous story of David and Goliath we'll have under consideration this evening. Anybody know where we left?
Lance had the last one.
Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to work our way around the room. And the men of the congregation are going to be asked if they want to participate with these questions. Now, I wanted to hit this slide again. I think maybe we've had this slide up before, but I wanted to just kind of remind everybody, here's where Goliath is walking down and he's challenging the Israelites, an Israelite warrior, come and fight me, for 40 days. They've been doing this for 40 days. You know, I always struggled with, you know, it seems like the Israelites are camping over here and they're walking all the way over here for, I didn't really understand that. There's still bits and pieces of this geography that I don't quite understand, but I wanted to get this back out there again. And the other thing, it's important to remember, the Mediterranean Sea is over here. And the Philistines have a big region right in here, and Israel's up here above this. Okay, Jerusalem's up here over this way. I can't remember. It's like 10 miles. It wasn't very far. But Jerusalem's over here on the right. So, and the Dead Sea further over there. So you kind of get a bearing of where you're at. Again, Jerusalem. Here we are. This is the Valley of Elim. Here's our battle. Gath, you know, we've been talking about this. So here we go. We got Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Mediterranean Sea. And here's our main theme for the night, really. Okay, Grant, Levi, you know I've been forgetting you multiple times. So Levi, you get the first question. How about that? If you'd like it.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. What was David's solution for the Goliath problem, and why did Saul object at first? This is verses 31 and 30 through 33.
Okay, so. I wasn't necessarily prepared for this, but it's pretty simple stuff. So what was David's solution for the Goliath problem? I was going to kill him. And why did Saul object at first? Well, obviously Saul loves David. He plays the harp for him. And he doesn't know God's plan. I'll just let other men build off that.
Okay. Anyone else got some other comments? Well, I had a couple extra. You know, David felt like somebody needed to silence this infidel, and he was willing to trust the Lord enough to do it, wasn't he? In verse 26, David, it seems, is ready to get involved as he asks questions about killing this uncircumcised Philistine for defying the living God. That's verse 26. So this has been going on for a while. Logan, please.
Maybe not any extra insight, but another question to add into this. So Levi just said, you know, David played the harp for him, and so that's why Saul was concerned. He knew him personally. But going to the end of this study, we're going to get into some verses. Does that count here, if you're saying that? You know, because Saul gets maybe confused here at the end of these verses with who he's like, who is this young man? So does he really know who this is at this point? I don't know, just something.
I had the same thought. Yeah, it's a good thing to consider. There's also a possible elapsed time from when David was playing the harp and was Saul's armor bearer, chapter 16, what is it, verses 19 or somewhere right there. So Saul knew David, but we don't know the elapsed time. Maybe it was long enough for David to grow a beard or something. I don't really know. I mean, we don't know that time. I'm not sure what to think about that. Austin?
I agree with you. I'm not sure about the time frame and how much time exactly has elapsed, because the last few verses kind of throw me for a loop a little bit. It seems odd if not only is he your personal harp player, but he's also your armor bearer, that you just forget, you know, several details about him. I know people, you know, whenever you work with people, you usually remember stuff like that, that's like remembering somebody's last name, you know, almost. But what I think is interesting is he talks about and what's important for us to get in our head, it's not just that Goliath is huge, but it's also the amount of training that he's had, which is what Saul is pointing out here. He says he's been a man of war from his youth, which is, of course, what they used to do mm-hmm. with their children back in that mm-hmm. time. That was their summer camp, only it wasn't for the summer. And David was, I'm sure he was good at whatever he did. He was good enough to be an armor bearer, but he wasn't trained even to this extent. So it's not just that Goliath is huge and David's small. It's that the skill level is completely out of whack, even at the best.
Yeah, Bart.
David's courage obviously is off the chart in this situation, but he's following the example. We talked a little bit about it in our study. He's following Jonathan's example. Remember, Jonathan back in chapter 14, some time ago, had climbed up and faced down a garrison, 20 or so Philistines, and Jonathan had said to his armor bearer, "Nothing restrains the Lord from saving by few or by many." And that, obviously, I'm sure that armor bearer told everybody that story. Jonathan and David became fast friends. And so Jonathan's the example that David's following. David knows that if the Lord decides to defeat an enemy, it doesn't matter who's on, how few are on the Lord's side and how many. And in the book of Judges, right?
Right.
David knows his history over and over and over again. Gideon and so on. God saved his people by few numbers. And so David is just a faithful young man, and he knows in this situation when someone's defying God that even somebody that you don't expect to win a battle can win a battle. So I think that's his mindset as he approaches this giant man. Plus, he'd been practicing. You know, what was he doing when he was shepherding the sheep? He was either praying, watching the sheep, or using that slingshot to hit the leaf on a tree 400 yards away. And so David also knew that he was ready for the battle.
Yeah, well, and we'll get into this in a little bit when he uses the bear and the lion example. You know, those are training. That's David training and didn't understand. We'll get into that here in a little bit. I found myself wondering if Saul had been waiting 40 days for somebody to say that they would step forward. You know, he didn't know who this was yet, but I bet word got back to Saul really quick. Hey, somebody wants to fight Goliath. And they went, and Saul's all excited, you know. Here comes the shepherd boy. I bet that was a shock. Verse 32. Here's the shepherd boy telling Saul, "Have courage. I got this." You know, David's exuding confidence here as he's talking to Saul. "I've got this." It's one thing to say that somebody should do something about this giant Goliath or some other problem, pick a problem, but it's something totally different for somebody to say, "I'm going to go do something." So that's David right there. Okay, anything else on question number? Oh, Hunter, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know we have a lot of ground to cover, and I just wanted to say, before we even get into all this, it's important to keep in mind, like Bart was saying, the meta theme of this whole narrative is faith. And so this is one of the most misunderstood things, I think, in the Old Testament of, you know, this is overcoming insurmountable odds and courage, which it is, but this is David's supreme faith. And talking about what it's all objective at first, you know, Saul didn't really have probably a lot to go off of as far as David is concerned. You know, moving forward in the next couple chapters, Saul clearly sees God as with David. Like there's a hand with him. I don't know if he probably hasn't seen that yet. So understandably, I get where Saul's coming from. But we see this opposition, this contrast between supreme faith in David and then Saul, who's starting to, he already has faltered, but he's starting to get weaker and weaker. And so we kind of see these two mm-hmm. changing. So just to keep that in mind.
Yeah, good point. Anyone else? Question number one. Levi.
Yeah, I just wanted to really quickly mention, as far as I could be wrong, I just get lost sometimes in these stories about where we are. But we were talking about Saul's mindset, and as far as I know right now, David is just his heart player that he really likes. And I was looking, while you guys were talking, I was looking at the next chapter. He only starts, I think it says that Saul had an eye for David once he gets back from the battle, and then all the ladies are like kind of making fun of Saul. And that's when Saul starts to get really good at David. But don't know. I just want to point that out because I get lost sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. It's hard to keep track of this sometimes. All right, we better keep moving. Question number two. Grant, if you'd like it. What was David's reasoning as to why he could fight against Goliath? Was David being arrogant or full of faith? And what is the difference? Why would Saul let him do it?
The first question, what was David's reasoning that he couldn't fight through life? He said here that when he was watching the sheep, that the lion come against him, he would take care of the lion. The bear would come against him, mm-hmm. take care of the bear. The bear would grab him up, he just stabbed the bear. He was able to show that he's had some battle experience before against things that people would not have battle experience against. And that would conclude that Goliath now being something that's a force larger than man, quite literally, larger than anybody there, and that he can take care of this. He can do this. He said that he's got some experience. So the second part there, with David being arrogant or just being full of faith, we do see it here when David does say, he does say, I did this, but then he says in verse 37, the Lord who delivered me from the paw. So
yes.
He does say, this was because of God's
yes.
being able to work through him.
That happens again a little bit later, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
It does kind of look like it might be a little bit of arrogance, but it does say it's because of God. I did this, but... Yes, to say it's all faith in God right there. And then what's the difference? He doesn't rely upon. He doesn't say it's because only because of me. It's because of God. He
mm-hmm.
So that's there. The last part there. Why would Saul let him do it? I don't really know exactly why. Either Saul really did believe that David could do this and had full faith and confidence that David was able to do this. That's one option. Another one is that David was going to do it anyway. Let David do it because David was young home doing it and brought Saul's attention. This is going to happen. So it could be that. Or last one is that Saul could have somebody to actually blame in case something went wrong. Say, well, it wasn't my fault. Something I went forward and it wasn't because of me. It could be because of any one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaning towards the last one. Saul had somebody to pin it on in case something goes wrong. But I don't know if we exactly said exactly why.
Yeah, kind of related to that last point. I kind of found myself wondering if Saul let David go because he knew if Goliath killed David, yeah, you killed a shepherd boy, big deal. So I don't know where that balance is. I'm not sure. How do we know where Saul's mind, what Saul was thinking? I don't know that we have enough information really to judge what Saul was thinking. But there's different possibilities, aren't there? Anyone else? Question number two. You know, again, the lion and the bear, I hadn't thought about them as being Goliath training for David. And we don't know what other battles he had to fight, different things as he was a shepherd. Just like David, he wasn't sure. You know, in chapter 16, verse 13, Samuel anoints David king. David's going to be the next king. And so, think about that running through David's mind. And he is fully, isn't he? I mean, he is fully trusting the Lord. The Lord said, I'm going to be king. I'm going to go take out Goliath. You know, to me, that's way powerful, the trust and the confidence that he had in the Lord. Let me see. You know, arrogance. Arrogance is exaggerating one's own worth or importance, often by an overbearing manner, or often in an overbearing manner. That's arrogance. For me, think these guys on TV that catch a pass and they thump their chest or they get in the end zone and they're screaming, they're all, you know, to me that's arrogance. Look at me, look what I did. That's what I see as arrogance. That's not David at all. David was none of that, but he was full of faith. Faith gave David the confidence that he needed to calmly explain to Saul why he could do this. And again, I want to believe that Saul trusted David, but Saul's hung up on the tape, you know. He's looking at the tail of the tape. 105 versus 400. 5'5" versus 9 foot. You see, Saul can't get past the tail of the tape. And that's what the Lord does so many times. He uses small things to make great, to accomplish great things. Okay, we need to keep moving. Anyone else on question? Yeah.
I just want to add, I like that, tail of the tape. To me, it was almost like David is saying that if the Lord is going to deliver me from such enemies like the lion and the bear, when there's relatively little on the line, how much more so when his name is being blasphemed and his people's freedom is on?
There you go.
It's almost like David is saying, he recognizes that all the Lord needs is just one person to step up. It doesn't even matter who it is. He said, it might as well be me, because it doesn't, ultimately, he's going to use whoever steps up.
Yeah, good point. All right, let's keep moving. Question number three. Oh, there's my cute little slide. There's old Goliath being arrogant, you know. Look at me. All right. Trace, if you'd like question number three. What did Saul try to offer David to help in the battle? Why did David refuse? What did David use instead? Verses 38 through 40.
So, for part A, Saul, it says Saul put his own armor on him. So he mailed him, he put mail on, armor on him. That's chain mail or what, but it's heavy armor. It's, and not to say that David couldn't handle that, but at the same time, yeah, we don't know exactly how old David was. He probably could have if that was what he was comfortable with.
Well, remember, Saul was a big guy, too.
Saul's
he was one of the tallest in Israel.
And he was fully armored.
Sure.
He was a man of war. Mm-hmm. And David was not necessarily a man of war. He was a shepherd. But at the same time, David, you know, it says in verse 39, I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them. So, I mean, it was probably fitted to Saul.
Right.
Saul, yeah, like you said, Saul was probably a lot taller than David also. So it wouldn't fit. So that kind of answers part B. What did David choose instead? He chose his staff. He chose five smooth stones. And he chose his sling. And, you know, and plus he had God on his side. So that was probably the best weapon he had. One man with God can win anything. So,
right.
That's all I need.
Good. Very good. Very good. Anyone else on question number? Levi.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting. I was studying with Dad, and he was poking around on some other translations. And apparently there's a lot of translations that say cloth or like wool fabric. So apparently there's a large amount of translations that don't say that it was his armor, but like maybe a lighter garment. So I have a hard time picturing Saul, because I'm pretty sure it says he's tall, right? When we first meet Saul.
Yeah,
so he's real tall. David is like average, short height, I think. But I just think he's short because we always picture him as a boy. Maybe someone else is more on that. But it's always weird for me to imagine, because I'm like, why would he do that? He's way taller than him. Why would he even try that? But it makes more sense if it's like a smaller garment, like a cloth. But I don't know. I think it was the Septuagint and then some other ones. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Very good. Appreciate you pointing that out. We had the bronze helmet, too, and I don't know how big a head Saul had. But, yeah, he got a big head. He got a bigger head after he became king. Yep.
Alternative, I think, would be the fact that there was no armor. Saul and Jonathan, at one point, not more than a couple chapters ago, were the only people that had swords. Everybody else is using farm implements. So that may be part of it, too, that this is the only armor really that we have at this point. Why don't you try to use that? If it is actually chainmail, if it's cloth, I don't know.
Yeah, anyone else? Hunter?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be redundant, but again, this is the whole faith aspect that Saul is sending him out there, maybe like a little ceremonial as well, you know, if you're going to represent Israel, so you're going to wear this sort of, I don't know, whatever, cloth, and, you know, kind of marching. But more is like, if he hits you upside the chest and knocks you back 10 yards, you're going to automatically get cut in half. Whereas David says, no, I don't need it. It's a whole faith thing.
Yep. Anyone else? Question number three. Remember chapter 16, verse 21, that David was Saul's armor bearer. So David would have known this armor, would have known it didn't fit him. Let's see. Verse 40, his staff, 5 smooth stones, his sling and a pouch. The 5 smooth stones, digging around, it was suggested that Goliath had 4 other brothers, and that these 5 stones, one was reserved for each of these big giants. So they got one out of the way. Anything else on Austin?
In your sentence, David didn't have a backup plan. I love that point. He didn't. Well, what's going to happen if God doesn't work out the first try? He said, "Doesn't matter. I don't care." I like that.
Yeah. Good call. Question number 4. All right. Let's see. Why did Goliath disdain David and curse him? What does David answer back to Goliath? And what are some theological lessons from the answers? This is verses 41 through 47. Malin, would you like this one?
Sure. I'll give it a try here. I guess the first part, because David was basically insulting him by not wearing any armor. He's like, "I'm going to fight you, but I'm not going to be equipped." So that would kind of be disrespectful, I guess, that's what it looks like there. That he wouldn't need any shields or weapons to defeat such a great warrior, and then this part B, does David get you back to Goliath? Well, we can see that he, what's that verse, 40, he said that he will kill him, and then the Philistine soldiers will be eaten by the animals and the birds, the wild beasts of the earth. It shows that David had the power of God on his side, that certainly, God doesn't see things as we see them. We might think that this is silly, not having any weapons or shields or anything out there, but when you put your faith in God, you can do anything. That's what David was doing here. And then we see that God, of course, looks at the heart. He doesn't look at the material things. And then, of course, David had the power of God. He could do anything.
Yeah, that's right. That's the bottom line, isn't it? Yeah, very good. Very good. Anyone else on question? Anything to add on question number 4? Austin?
I love David's response. It's so cool. And he turns it almost, the advantages that Goliath thinks that he has, he just completely turns it on his head, because David doesn't see this as David versus Goliath, which is how we characterize the story. This is Goliath against God.
That's right.
And Goliath never, David knows that Goliath never had a chance to begin with, no matter who was standing up against him. Tell the tape, that's the tape that David saw. So I love that aspect. And this goes back to the principle in Romans chapter 8, verse 31 through 39. If God is for us, who can be against us? Malin just said it a second ago. And we as Christians need to understand that. It's not us against the world, it's the world against God. And Jesus said, "I've already conquered. I've already overcome the world." So there's no one's going to separate us from the love of Christ except for us.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I kind of paraphrase a little bit David's answer back to Goliath. You come with all these weapons, but I come in the name of the Lord God of Israel, whom you defied. The Lord will deliver you to me, and I will take your head from you, and all the earth will know that there is a God of Israel. The battle is the Lord's. That's my paraphrase, but it took David a little longer to say that, but that's powerful. David was right there. He knew. He knew he had the Lord on his side. Anyone else? Question number 4. Bart, please.
Yeah, David has the Holy Spirit. The Spirit came upon him, and so that is, obviously part of why he's able to give such. But this is unquestionably the greatest speech that a small opponent, a human opponent, ever makes against Satan, aside from our Lord, of course. And I like the fact that he makes a prophecy. David makes a prophecy here. He says, "This day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts. This was supposed to be a one man mano a mano hand to hand combat, and then the winner, that's the other army gives up, and so that was the deal. But David says, no, that's not what's going to happen. I'm going to kill you, and then we're going to take your camp and kill everybody else. So, and that prophecy comes true, obviously via the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, you know, for me, some theological lessons: heavy weapons, no match against the power of God. You know, David gives God the glory, knowing it was God's battle. All right, anything else? Question number four. All right, let's go to question number five. Logan? Let's see. How was Goliath delivered into the hand of David by the Lord? How did the rest of the battle go?
Yeah, so just to start off before I answer the whole of this question, kind of want to share how this study kind of helped my understanding of this great story, you know. I'd always pictured this as a kid and growing up. It's always been this way for me, where it's like David, you know, he's standing there, Goliath's pretty far off, and he just slings it. And, you know, maybe Goliath's acting all high and mighty, and he just gets hit and falls over. That's how I've always pictured it. But you read here in verse 48 that so it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. So that's right before this event takes place. So they're charging at each other, you know. And
David's charging toward Goliath. I think Goliath lumbered to get up.
Oh, you think so?
And then he's,
okay.
Hey, give me my sword. That's kind of how I see it.
Cool. If you want to elaborate on that after I'm done with what I'm about to say, because I love the imagining that.
Yeah,
It's so good. But I just imagine them as, let's see, I want to read Goliath's part again. So the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David. So yeah, you might be right. Maybe lumbered. But I picture it as they're both charging. Maybe David, you know, being light and winding up a sling, you know, he's probably going a bit faster. But they're charging at each other. And so David lets it fly. Who knows how close they get? But that thing smacks him right in the head, as we know, you know. That hasn't changed for me. I always knew that it hit him in the head. But it says he falls on his face. So previously, I would always picture it hit him, and he's just, oh. And he just maybe slowly crumples to the floor. But if he's charging, he just gets hit and falls right before David like that. I never, you know, thought of it that way. So maybe reframing it like that kind of gave me a different perspective on that whole event. But yeah, as to the question, how was Goliath delivered into the hand of David? Well, I kind of answered that. You know, it's just the way the battle has been set up. You know, if the Philistines wanted to have a better shot at this going up against God, maybe they should have said it's a melee only, swords only battle here, no ranged weapons, you know. So the Lord is definitely at work here, kind of framing this whole battle for David and for Israel. And how did the rest of the battle go? Well, the Philistines flee after this. They can't believe that, you know, their head captain, the giant of a man, has just been instantly annihilated, you know. So Quite a bit. I'm glad I got this question.
I'm glad you got it. Anyone else want to add to question number five? All right, let's see. Yeah, I love thinking about Goliath getting up, and he's trying to get his gear together. And David, yeah, first of all, Goliath is looking around. Goliath is trying to find, okay, what? And I didn't think about the stick. You come against me like I'm a dog with sticks? That was probably the staff. I didn't think about that before. He was thinking about the staff as sticks. You come against me like I'm a dog with sticks. You know, he's getting ahead of steam going now. It's kind of like, I think, and David's, ooh. To me, it's great because I love thinking about David. When he's headed toward Goliath, you know, I see him on the move. He's not doing this on one. He's running toward Goliath, gets his stone, loads his pouch. Gets that thing swirling. I'm not sure if I'm over this yet. Gets this thing swirling and clobbers him right in the forehead. To me, it's amazing. And again, the work of the Lord. He couldn't do this on his own. Go ahead.
And just really, really quick.
Yeah.
If you hadn't looked up previously to anyone here, if you haven't previously looked up what it looks like for someone to throw a sling. It's actually really scary.
Yeah.
I'd never seen it before until, you know, just a little while ago. So.
I wanted to look some stats up, and I didn't allow enough time for it. But to me, a sling is kind of like that atlatl, the stick and the spear thing. You know, these are ancient tools that were very effective and deadly. Okay, we've got a little more time left. Question, anybody else? Let's hit question number five, or six. Bart, if you'd like six. How did Saul not know who David was the son of, and why was it important?
Well, you know, there's a lot of debate about this, as you guys mentioned previously. And the skeptics, the people who believe that the Bible isn't inspired, they say that it's because there were multiple narratives that were brought together, you know, they were fused together, and they got confused. Now, that's the skeptics' answer to this. The commentators say, well, as you sort of alluded to, maybe a period of time passed, and David's appearance had changed. He grew a beard, and, you know, David wasn't recognized by Saul. So that's another possibility. And a third possibility is that, you know, the king is mentally ill, obviously. The Lord has afflicted him with a spirit that's distressing him, and perhaps he had lost, you know, his recognition. But I doubt all of those. I don't think any of those work for me. And the reason is because David has come into the king's inner, you know, sanctum and played for him. That's not going to happen unless you're cleared by everybody. You know, there is a guard surrounding the king that isn't going to let you in until they know who you are, what you're doing there, and, you know, that's going to test your DNA. It's White House security. So they all know him, and they all know him very well. So why is this in the account? I think it's in the account. We talked about it in our study. Because this is a type of Christ. David is a type of Christ. So he's born in Bethlehem. He's hated by his brothers. He is underestimated by everyone, right? Hated by the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And then Christ defeats the great Goliath enemy that had all of mankind, you know, at risk. And so how does the inquiring about whose son is he is? Well, over in Matthew chapter 22, in verse 42, one of the, you know, we hear sermons on this all the time. Matthew 22:42, it says, Jesus asks the Pharisees, what do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he? And so that is a question that was asked of Jesus. Because Jesus was, you know, his heritage was debated.
Yeah.
Right? Because his father, they would say, was Joseph. But that wasn't the case, obviously. Joseph was not the father of Christ. It was Jesus was of divine origin. So the question is always about Jesus to this day, whose son is he? And so I think this is in the story because it's drawing our attention to the Christ and the question that everyone has to answer, who is Jesus? Is he the son of God?
Yeah, very good point. Excellent point. Levi.
Kind of like what Dad said, bringing Jesus into this narrative, but I was thinking while he was talking, I was looking around some other chapters, the one we studied like a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about, you know, does it come up in conversation, who is your father? And it actually did come up, and he told Saul directly, and it just happened a second ago. But Saul, yeah, sorry, I had it just a second ago. But it does come up in conversation where Saul's there and Jesse, he doesn't know he's the son of Jesse. But I was thinking about it, and you know, another way you could view this conversation is that it's kind of like a, where did you come from? You know, because, you know, back in the day, families meant a lot more in a certain way, you know, like, I'm the father, I'm the son of blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. And just in the previous chapter, you know, he's mentioned he's the son of Jesse, but since he's coming back from this battle ahead of this giant, and he's like, who are you? You know, I don't know who Jesse is. I mean, I've heard of him, but who, you know, but not to dismiss what Dad said, but I think that's also cool too. But I think as far as Saul's mindset, I think maybe that's kind of where he's coming from. where did you come from? You know, I don't know who Jesse is.
To me, I'm glad you brought it up because I had a footnote over here. Human head weighs about 11 pounds. I did look that one up. The human head weighs, you know what? I should say the average person's head weighs 11 pounds. If I'm thinking Goliath is pushing 400 pounds or whatever, I mean, his head might have been as big as a 5-gallon bucket. You know, we're a 30-pound head, and David's, go ahead. And David's carrying it around. Go ahead.
Just at the end of what you say, I just found the verse that I was thinking about.
Yeah, give it to me.
All right, yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's in 1 Samuel chapter 16, in conversation, so Saul said to his servants, it's verse 17, so Saul said to his servants, provide me now a man who can play well and bring him to me. Then one of the servants answered and said, look, I have seen the son of Jesse. So it's confirmed to Saul whose son he is, and we don't know the time frame of it, obviously.
Well, and Saul sent word back to Jesse, I want to keep your son, basically.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, yeah. Good stuff. Oh, Hunter?
Yeah, I mean, just to supplement whatever was said.
We're all right.
Else is saying, I agree with part of it, certainly could be, and pretty much what Levi's saying. It could just be like almost a rhetorical sort of question. You know, this crazy feat, you know, if you went and played for the Chiefs tomorrow, were the starting quarterback and scored 60 on Baltimore, who are you? You know, like, is your dad a big man? Like, you know what I mean? Like, kind of more like that. And so I don't think this is by anything something that we should struggle with.
Yeah.
With his credit center.
Yeah, yeah. And again, providence of God could have caused all this too. But I like the connection to Christ. Yeah, also.
To Hunter's point, John Gill in his commentary said that Saul's gonna give David his daughter, right? He's ennobling now this family in the kingdom and elevating them to a high status. That was part of the promise for whoever killed Goliath. So that might be part of it too.
Yeah. Very good. Any final comments by any of the men? If not, I hope you've enjoyed the study. I did.